Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is October 19th, 2011. This is show number 4 with our co-host, Dr. Adil Kasim, MD, who is a fourth generation homeopath. And we're going to be continuing our study all about hypertension. Today I'm going to begin with a quote, "The greatest treasures are those invisible to the eye, but found by the heart." And that is an anonymous quote. Also, I want to ask Hello, Dr. Adil. Are you using your headset today, right?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I wanted to just introduce the show that we have been continuing the series on hypertension, and that we discussed what is hypertension, the hypertensive state, and the disease proper from the last time. And this time we're going to be talking a lot about different types of hypertension, and you're going to introduce those different types. And is there anything else that you wanted to say about hypertension itself? Maybe something that you have particularly learned. For some reason, I'm getting an echo today.
I'm getting an echo today.
Something's going on with that. Not exactly sure. If you're on your show page, could you do me a favor and just turn the sound off of the show page? Because that's probably playing.
I'm getting an echo today.
Yeah, you hear that. Okay, we're going to try and repair that. You could just close that window if it's open.
Okay, is it all right now?
Okay, we're testing. Okay, good. Yeah.
Fine.
I was wondering if you had something special that you particularly learned about hypertension in either this week, month, or year?
Yeah, now, last time we did talk about hypertension in general. We talked about systemic hypertension. But then there are different types of hypertension. Basically, hypertension has to be viewed on the physical level into two parts. Either increased pressure in the arteries, which is called arterial hypertension, or it is venous hypertension, or increased pressure in the veins. Now, arterial hypertension can be systemic hypertension, what we described last show. And this time, I want to go on for a certain specific localized type of arterial hypertension, meaning thereby that certain arteries only are in that hypertensive state. Now, for example, is a pulmonary hypertension. As far as venous hypertension is concerned, we have got portal hypertension. And there's then another type of hypertension, which is called intracranial hypertension. So I would like to throw some light on about these aspects, because they are as equally important as systemic hypertension as well. Since we were talking about hypertension, I would like to speak on these things too.
Okay, I'm looking forward to learning more about it. And this is localized to different organs or tissues or parts of the body?
Yeah, I mean, for example, now let's talk about pulmonary hypertension. pulmonary hypertension basically, see, pulmonary artery, the name is self-explanatory. It has to connect the pulmone. Pulmone means the lungs and the heart. So the pulmonary artery connects the right ventricle with the lungs. It supplies the blood from the right ventricle to the lungs. Now, the normal pulmonary artery pressure is 12 to 16 millimeters of mercury. If it is greater than 25 millimeters of mercury at rest or 30 millimeters of mercury on exercise, then we call it pulmonary hypertensive state. And there are so many factors, causes, which cause pulmonary hypertension. It's quite a common disorder. Initially, it was thought to be rare, but then throughout the globe, this menace is increasing day by day. One important feature why we are talking about pulmonary hypertension is whenever a surgery is to be performed, cardiac surgery or for that matter lung surgery, the pulmonary artery tension has to be less. I mean, it has to be under control. Otherwise, these surgeries are not successful.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many people suffer from chronic disorders that lead to pulmonary hypertension. For example, people who are prone to valvular disorders like mitral stenosis or have got atrial or ventricular defects or even HIV positive people, they have lots of got pulmonary hypertension. People who smoke cocaine, are constant consumers of alcohol, binge alcohol, those who have got chronic obstructive airway disease, sleep apnea syndrome, even those people who live in low-lying areas but then have to live on high altitudes for a particular long time, even their arteries, they develop pulmonary hypertension. And then, likewise, malignancies. Many malignancies are prone to go to the lungs, metastasize to the lungs. Even lung carcinoma per se can metastasize in the pulmonary artery and block the pulmonary artery, thereby increasing the pressure. So all these factors cause pulmonary hypertension. Recently, I had a case, a very small baby. I'm talking about last month. I was called to an NICU, that is neonatal intensive care unit. One of my modern medicine colleagues, pediatrician, he called me. A young boy aged 9 days, he was delivered and he had aspirated some contents. And thereby, he was put on the ventilator and with very high pulmonary hypertension. So, now this case, such cases are basically useless cases because they don't recover. That is according to modern medicine view. But then he asked me whether I could help with homeopathy. I started the therapy with Antim Tart. And slowly, it took us 4 days to wean off the patient off ventilator and the baby is still good. I mean, a life could be saved because of homeopathy, knowing that homeopathy does act in pulmonary hypertension.
Okay, that's great. So, Antimonium Tart is a homeopathic remedy that we know is commonly used for the lungs, for congestion in the lungs. Maybe the listeners might want to know a little bit about the remedy.
Yeah, now antimony tart is one of the wonderful remedies which we use particularly in situations which demand intensive cardiac care, intensive pulmonary care. Now, this remedy has got three important features. One of the important features is dyspnea or breathlessness, severe breathlessness in which the patient is gasping for breath or the patient has been put on ventilator. Then this remedy has got cough, which is dry cough, and the expectoration is very difficult to remove. The entire lungs are filled with fluid, but the child or the person is unable to expectorate out freely. This is along with there is cyanosis, that is blueness, blue discoloration of the skin and mucous membrane. If you have got this trio in a man, then you need to give Antim Tart, one of the very, very good remedies, and has to be given in higher potencies.
Okay. And higher potencies, are you talking about 200 C and higher or higher
more
than
higher.
That? Higher.
Higher than that. 1M, 10M, 50M, including CM. For example, this baby was given millisimal scale, 0 by 1 we started. And we started every 3 hourly, and it took us 3 complete days for the baby to come out of the ventilator and the child is safe. So it really takes high potencies because it's a life-saving drug. 3 life-saving drugs I want the audience to know. In homeopathy, we have got antimonium tart, we have got CarboVeg, and we have got Arsenic Alb. These three remedies really save lives.
Okay. We're probably going to talk about those three continually because they come up so frequently in the repertory and the Materia Medica. Okay, so was there something else that you wanted to say about pulmonary hypertension?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we just talk about a child. Now, pulmonary hypertension can also be seen in adults. And it's a very slow-growing process. And one of the first symptoms one can recognize pulmonary hypertension would be dyspnea or breathlessness. Initially, I could go 4 kilometers, but now I can't go even 1 kilometer. I'm fatigued. I get breathless. Then, unusual fainting. I mean, I feel like I'm fainting. I do not fall unconscious, but those fainting fits, which are there like in Nux Mosqueta. I mean, we have got fainting fits. Then dizziness, especially when bending forward or just getting up from sitting position. Cough, which is dry, and it is typical hacking type of cough, what we call smoker's cough. It doesn't come from the lungs, it just comes from the throat.
Mm-hmm.
Then some people have got angina. A dull aching pain constantly in the center of the chest, which is neither radiating to the left side or right side, or neither the up or back. It's still there, and it is increased or pronounced more on exertion. Any sort of exertion, and it's pronounced. And then slowly and steadily over a period of weeks to months, people start developing swelling around the ankles. Some people may say that when I get up, around my back, the lower back, there is some swelling, and then swelling below the eyelids. And rarely, person may present with sudden hemoptysis or coughing of blood. So these are the pronounced features of pulmonary hypertension. Now, what happens is, whatever is the cause, there is a vasoconstriction. I mean, the pulmonary artery, the diameter of the pulmonary artery goes on decreasing in size. So the blood flow from the heart to the lungs is impeded. Over a period of time, this arterial wall becomes stiffer and stiffer and more thicker, what we call as medically termed as fibrosis. And ultimately, it leads to right ventricular hypertrophy or right ventricular enlargement, because the right ventricle tries to compensate for the increasing resistance it has been offered to throw off the blood. So it increases in size to a time when ultimately it cannot do more, and that is why it fails, and then we have got right ventricular failure. So this is pulmonary arterial hypertension. Then, and one of the classical drugs which we use for specifically decreasing pulmonary hypertension, apart from antimony tart, which I mentioned just now, are Convallaria Mejalis, a very beautiful drug which we have to use in low potencies, mother tinctures, for a long period of time, probably month, year. And another remedy is Adonis Vir. So these three remedies have been definitely proved, and we have substantiated with evidence that they decrease the pulmonary arterial hypertension, and thereby, even there are many patients who, because of high pulmonary hypertension, cannot go in for surgeries, and we have made them to go in for surgeries just by decreasing the PA pressure.
You've enabled them to go to surgery, or you've made it so that it's not necessary to go into surgery?
There are certain patients enabled them to go in for surgeries, because okay. Moment the PA pressure is high, above 25 or above 30, even 45, the heart surgeries are out of question. So we have enabled them to go in for surgeries by reducing the PA pressure a little bit. And mm-hmm. in few cases, we have actually reduced it to an extent that they do not require surgery at all.
Okay, so was there any? Can you tell us a little bit more about those two remedies that come up also quite frequently? You've mentioned in the past three shows, Convallarium and
Adonis Vir.
Yes.
Now, Convallarium Mejalis and Adonis Vir, both are remedies which are have affinity for heart and its actions, and they are basically meant for failure states of the heart. I mean, when the right ventricle or the left ventricle or the atrium, both atria, right or left, the functional efficacy decreases, these both these remedies have a propensity to tone up the heart, what we call. This is also there with digitalis and also with strophanthus, but more pronounced with Adonis Ver. Now, particularly when the valves fail, for example, we've got mitral valve and a tricuspid valve, aortic valve. Now, these valves, when they don't work, we give the name aortic regurgitation or mitral regurgitation. In such situations, the pressure inside the ventricles and the atria becomes more and more, and thereby causing them to decrease their work efficiency and ultimately fail. So these remedies, whatever I mentioned, Convallaria or for that matter Adonis Ver, both of these have got specific action to increase the tone of the heart muscle, increase the work efficiency, and as well as by toning them up, also decreases the regurgitation aspect of the valves. So they are a great help in managing failure states, and in particularly also in addition to pulmonary hypertension in spite of fibrosis. Now, once the arterial wall is stiff, it's very, very difficult to actually manage the case unless you put a stent in that. But that too doesn't help all the time. But if you can do it with medicines, we can surely do it. Actually, one very important thing, the drug Viagra, or that sildenafil citrate, was specifically developed, invented for this disorder. Of course, it is being used for something else. That is a different thing.
Right. So this is the way the allopathic developed drugs. They developed drugs from learning what the medicinal effect is, and then using it for that instead of the way that we do it. So do you want to go ahead and talk about, let's see, portal hypertension?
Yeah. Yeah, portal hypertension is another fascinating arena, although classically it does not come into hypertensive state, but since we are talking about hypertension, then portal vein is a, there are three systems of blood systems which we have got in the body. First is our systemic circulation, then we have got a pulmonary circulation, and we have got portal circulation. Now, this portal vein is basically made up of splenic vein and intestinal vein. It enters the liver. Now, it's just a vein, but it can also undergo what we call as portal hypertension, and that is raised hypertensive state. Now, in such a situation, the pressure, normally pressure of the portal vein is less than 10 millimeters of mercury. And the patient starts developing gradual ascites. Ascites means fluid inside the peritoneum. Then the patient may go into increased risk of peritonitis, that is recurrent severe abdominal pain with infection in the abdomen, which requires immediate surgery. Then splenomegaly. The spleen increases in size to such an extent that is called grade 4 spleen, that is it encompasses the entire abdomen filled with spleen because of portal hypertension. And then we have got portocaval anastomosis, the portal vein meeting the systemic circulation, and the meeting points undergo swelling. So we can typically see esophageal varices. I mean, there are collection of blood vessels which burst, become very fragile and burst. They are in the esophagus as well as hemorrhoids. So these are symptoms of portal hypertension. They may be, the causes are varied. It can be prehepatic cause, for example, the portal vein can be blocked or thrombosed by, say, a blood clot or a malignancy. Or it can be intrahepatic, which is the most common cause, alcoholic cirrhosis of liver or cirrhosis because of any cause. And it can be posthepatic, for example, inferior vena cava or the hepatic vein thrombosis. Now, all these can lead to portal hypertension. The biggest problem is, once portal hypertension starts, it's a never-ending phenomena, and the patient keeps on going from bad to worse. And in this case also, symptomatically, we can help. Homeopathy can help. They have got great many drugs. One of the important drugs being, again, arsenic alb, apis mellifica, helleborus. There is a rare Indian drug called Bohavia diffusa. All these drugs definitely decrease the portal hypertension as well as the symptoms of portal hypertension like ascites, or the patient going into liver failure, hepatic encephalopathy. The increases.
I was going to ask you to spell the last one. We are most familiar with Arsenicum album, Apis mellifica, Helleborus, but what was the fourth rare Indian? How do you spell that?
Boehrarria, Boehrarria. Boehrarria diffusa. It's an Indian herb used for a long, long time, many centuries in Ayurvedic. So we have prepared the mother tincture and used it in homeopathy, and equally good results for portal hypertension.
Okay. Okay, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
So once the cascade starts, once the portal hypertension starts, the first symptom generally develop is ascites. The patient starts feeling heaviness in his or her abdomen, and the belly goes on starting increasing in size, and what the doctor finds out is fluid fill. Now, in modern medicine, the only thing is either give Lasix or puncture the site and drain out the ascites, the ascitic fluid. But then once you do that, it refills, the entire water refills, and then again you have got a great risk of peritoneal infections. So we don't assort to that unless the abdomen is too tense with fluid. So it's better to give such drugs, as I mentioned earlier, and control the entire situation. Now, if in advanced cases, when the patient has got cirrhosis of liver with severe portal hypertension, he or she starts vomiting blood. It's huge. I mean, sometimes the vomiting of blood can increase to 1 liter. I have seen patients. In such situations, we have got drugs like phosphorus. Now, phosphorus here has to be given in millisimal scale and in frequent repetitions till the bleeding stops. We also have got snake remedies like Elaps, Crotalis horridus, Lachesis. These are the wonderful remedies to stop the hematemesis there and then. And thereby, we can reduce the episodes of blood transfusion as well as hematemesis. So, then if the disease still continues, the patient goes in for hepatic encephalopathy. Thereby, he or she starts murmuring things. There is amnesia. There is delirium. In such situations, we have got drugs like stramonium. We have got hyoscyamus. And not belladonna, but only the other two mentioned drugs, which can control even hepatic encephalopathy and bring down the patient somewhere back to normal. Of course, once portal hypertension and cirrhosis of liver starts, they are incurable, but then very well manageable with homeopathy. And they are chronic disorders. It takes 2, 3, 4, 6 years, and the patient keeps on suffering from the entire gamut of symptoms.
Okay, so homeopathy can really just help to manage these pathological disorders that have already occurred, because in the previous talk, you told us how we have the ability of the organ to stretch and accommodate, but we put so much pressure on it that it cannot stretch anymore. It becomes tense and enlarged or thickens the walls, and then it's not able to have that flexibility anymore. So did you have another type of hypertension you wanted to talk about?
Before that, both for pulmonary and portal hypertension, suppose by chance, see, many times patients don't come with primary symptoms. I mean, they neglect it for quite a long time because they themselves are not at fault. They don't know what the disease is. But by chance, if they're detected quite early, by chance, if they have gone for something else and the investigations have done and they have detected pulmonary hypertensive or portal hypertension, in such situations, instead of giving them symptomatic remedies or symptomatic relief, we can actually give them constitutional remedies depending upon the mental state, the physical generalities, and thereby drugs like phosphorus, calcarea carb, lycopodium, sulfur, causticum, puja, natrum salve, all these drugs or many more, individualistic of course, they help to diffuse the disease. The entire disease process is cut off there. It's a very, very big thing which general public also need to know. They don't need to get disheartened the moment they have been diagnosed, because in allopathy or in modern medicine, we hardly have drugs for such situations. And that is why particularly I wanted to discuss about these two situations, pulmonary hypertension as well as portal hypertension. Coming back to one of the very interesting aspects of a hypertensive state, which is called intracranial hypertension. Intra means inside, cranium means the skull. So when the fluid pressure of the cerebrospinal fluid, see, the brain is bathed with a fluid which is called cerebrospinal fluid. As it is, blood is the lifeline of the body, CSF is the lifeline of the brain. And minor changes here and there, molecular changes or ionic changes in the CSF cause the brain to dysfunction or function properly. Now, raised intracranial tension is another aspect which has received very less attention from homeopaths. Of course, we do have got good number of medicines. There are so many causes for raised ICT, raised intracranial tension. Another commonest is road traffic accident. Practically all cases end up with raised ICT if they are not treated in time. Then we have got infections like tuberculosis. In this part of the world, tuberculosis and tubercular meningitis, bacterial infections leading to bacterial meningitis. Viral fevers nowadays, epidemics of viral fevers are Japanese encephalitis, and all these drugs, all these infections are prone to increase intracranial tension. Then there's a worm which is called neurocysticercosis. Typically from the intestine, it crawls up via the liver, via the lungs, up via the carotid artery to the brain, and ultimately coils around and forms a cyst, which is called neurocysticercosis. And thereby, the only thing it ultimately dies, but then the area is a dead end, and thereby it increases intracranial tension. And a few symptoms which you have got, like it's a trio of headache. It's a severe splitting headache followed with vomiting and transient visual defect, blindness or transient blindness, what we call as amaurosis fugax. Amaurosis fugax, vomiting. Now, I would like to tell you, vomiting can be preceded with nausea and cannot be preceded with nausea. If it is preceded with nausea, it is generally gastrointestinal in origin. But when it is not preceded with nausea, it is cranial in origin, and that is important. Other than migraine, raised ICT causes headache, vomiting without nausea, and visual defects. So these are three classical features of raised intracranial tension. Many cancers, like the brain cancer, particularly gliomas, or metastasis of the other cancers to the brain, they are known to increase the ICT and thereby kill the patient just because of raised intracranial tension. Now, the commonest method adopted for reducing intracranial tension is a pipe or a stent, what we call, which is connected from the brain to the abdomen. But then every time it's not possible. And in homeopathy, we have got drugs again like Helleborus and Apis, which specifically decrease the raised ICT.
Oh, wow. So we have a clear set of homeopathic remedies at our disposal for these kinds of situations where the allopaths would just use the drugs or have to go in and do some kind of a surgery. And we can even preclude a more severe, we're going to be going a little bit over the regular 30-minute time today for just a little bit. Hopefully it's going to extend us through and not cut us off. So this is really important that the purpose in the shows is to let the public know that there are other ways. Once you go in for help, and perhaps, as you said, there you're going in for it, I'm waiting to see if it's going to shoot us off of here or we're going to keep going. If by accident somebody finds out about it, and there are things that can be done to preclude a more serious condition, but then again, they have to be managed and maintained by an expert who knows exactly what to do, someone like yourself, Dr. Adel, who has done I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of cases and is very familiar. You know what you're looking at and how you normally handle the case.
No, the purpose for saying, I know that, I agree, totally agree with you that skills are required. But then don't lose hope. I mean, if one pathologist says that something cannot be done, or surgery is not the only answer. Homeopathy, you should go in. I mean, there are so many homeopaths who have not, who are not vocal, but they are very good homeopaths. They also know about such situations. I mean, I have come on the show, I am a vocal person, so that people can know. But then there are so many people out there, there are gems in homeopaths, like yourself, Debbie, who know much more, but they may not be vocal as much. But then, yes, I want people to take help of homeopathy in such situations, in dire situations as well. That's what my message is.
Okay, and it's also, I'm thinking also, perhaps some people in the healthcare field, cardiologists or other medical physicians are listening to the show and they hear about Apis helleborus and the other remedies that you have spoken about in the different cases. So they can go and investigate, learn, and maybe take some courses. So there are, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we're doing these radio shows with you. And I your time is really precious. So I'm very, very thankful that you're with us. I also wanted to mention, is there any other information or educational thing you wanted to say today? And then we're going to close the show and let people know about your website.
Yeah. In the end, I would like to ask, I mean, although this was a bit technical than the last shows, but then it's essential because many people who are suffering, they need to know that pulmonary hypertension, although not curable, can be easily managed with homeopathy, number one. Second, life can be prolonged as well as made more conducive to living, and better life opportunities are there with homeopathic drugs. Homeopathy can be an adjuvant to surgery. Many times for raised ICT, if there is a shunt which we have put, many times shunts block, but then homeopathy medicines are there so that you can control the pressure system and the shunt basically is not required. There are many cases out there in the world who know about these drugs, if they are the disease since they are suffering from, but they don't know the avenues. And I would only want them to just go and seek opinion of any homeopathic physician, and he or she may be effectively able to help you with whatsoever meager drugs which we have, but then these drugs are effective. And for the doctors out there, medical professionals out there who deal with such cases, please make a trial of homeopathic drugs. Take one single drug, for example, Apis mellifica or arsenic, and try it out in, say, 100 patients, 200 patients, and report your failures or your successes with these homeopathic remedies. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. And I wanted to ask one more thing. This type of hypertension can occur at any age, or is it most usually in an older person?
No, I mean, injury can occur in any age, so raised ICT can occur in any age. Portal hypertension generally has an age of, 20 to 50, 40 years, whereas pulmonary hypertension, right from birth to the last stage. So pulmonary hypertension and raised intracranial tension both can occur at any age. Portal hypertension does not occur very early in life or very late in life. It occurs in midlife.
Okay. Great. So I want to thank everyone who is listening, to also encourage you to favorite the show, follow it, click the reminder button, share it with your friends, tweet it on Twitter. Just let people know about it, because this is really important information that you're not really going to hear anywhere else. And so next week, do you know what we're going to be talking about?
Yeah, we would be now focused. Actually, we were to talk about failures, but then time does not permit. Next episode, we will be talking about failures, heart failures, because huge chunk of patients are there out there of heart failures, and we would be offering them help, or the drugs I will tell you, how they can help with homeopathy.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you very much, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.